When is a word not a word? It's not a joke, but it's when it has lost its meaning. There are English words that down through the ages have changed. For instance, in the Psalms, one of the Psalms says, "Prevent me, O Lord, in all my doings." The word "prevent" originally meant go before, pre-venue, go before. But of course, we use the word "prevent" to stop. And so God's not stopping us. God's going before us. The word has changed. Charity, a wonderful word, charity. It was originally a word of tender-heartedness. Now it's a kind of pejorative term, isn't it? I don't want your charity. And we say it with a tone of voice because it has become debased. And even the word Christian. The word Christian, of course, we know started as a sneer of contempt. Oh, you're one of these Christianoys. And the Christians took it over and they made it a proud thing. To belong to Christ was not something of a sneer, but in something of love. And maybe today, sometimes Christian becomes just like a nice bloke, but it's far more for us. And of course, the word love. That's a chameleon word that has changed so often over the years. I can remember going down to Yorkshire, and at breakfast we were quite amused because the landlady always said, "Hello, love. Hello, my love. Do you want beans with my love?" And we got "my love" about 3,000 times during that week, and we all found it funny. My love. I suppose it's the Yorkshire equivalent of "all right, hen." But there we are. Love has kind of... Love, in fact, when we do something for love and not for money, it means we don't get paid. So, and in sporting world, love all in the tennis is nothing. there is no scoring at all. So love can mean so many things. But if a man with his heart pounding looks at into the eyes of his beloved and says, "I love you," he is not meaning nothing at all. It is very different indeed. So in the Hollywood vein, falling in love can mean a lot of things, and sometimes later on you see her falling out of it as soon as they fall in. I love donuts. I love money. Any strong attachment. I love my dog, my cat, my pizza, whatever. It's a strong attachment, usually because you like the look of something. But how different is the Bible word, love? God so loved the world that he gave his only son. John Lennon sang, "All You Need Is Love," didn't he? And I can remember my very first record I bought of a gospel group. It was an Irish group, and I've never heard of them since, but it was a group called The Revelers, and they sang a song that was said, "Love is the greatest thing, love is the only thing, love is the wonderful thing, so let's sing about love." And so it went on. The word is on the lips of many singers' entertainment, but what is it? What is it we're talking about? Interesting enough, in Greek, there are four different words for love. There is the word eros, which is the sexual attraction, physical attraction, from which we get the word erotic. It's the long, passionate kiss that you wait for and go and make the tea and the stellata when you come back. That's the eros. Secondly, there is the word, and it's a word, it's certainly the physical word for in the Greek. The second word for love is a word called storge, and it's quite interesting. It's a kind of family affection, the binding of things, your cousin, your family, the things that are close to you. and you feel that close, it doesn't mean you agree with them, but there's that bond. No matter what, how bad the father, he's still your father. No matter how wayward the son, he's still your son. It's that bond. That's storge. There's a third word called philia, and this is a common Greek word, the most the sort of affection that you can have. It's usually because of something you find attractive in the other. So there's a real bond of love, affection, a warmth, a very warm word, a very welcoming word. But none of these words is the Greek word for this in this passage, for love. Not one of them. Not the eros, not the affection, storge, not the one that sees something lovely in the other. The love of God is the love for sinners, unlovely ones. The love that sent Christ to die upon the cross. The love that is the gift of the Spirit. The love that Christ commands us to have, which is not a feeling. All, this is my command, that you love one another. The love that Paul describes in this chapter 13. And so it is a unique word. It was actually, the word is agape. And it was a word that was used originally. It's not common in Greek, classical Greek. It was used, as it were, of somebody with having something unexpected from a benefactor. You got something you never expected to get. And that was agape. But the Bible has taken it over to speak of God's great love to us. A love that embraces the unlovely. A love that is sacrificial. A love that is wonderful and brings outlawed mankind into the great family of the saints. An unconquerable benevolence that is good no matter what, even if you don't deserve it and you never respond, it is always good. And that's the kind of love. And if you look at this passage, first of all, Paul contrasts love with different things. The church in Corinth had many wonderful spiritual gifts, and Paul has been talking about his gifts in chapter 12, and he compares and contrasts some of these. What is the greatest, you might say? And you might think of some of the things, like he's mentioned, the speaking in tongues, where people go off into ecstatic utterance, or a prophetic word, where people have a sense of what is going to happen in God's word, the mysteries and the knowledge, faith. And, well, you might expect Paul to say that's the greatest. Surely by faith is one of the great things. By grace we're saved through faith. But Paul is quite clear in chapter 13. And when you go right to the very last sentence of the chapter, the three things remain: faith, hope, love. But he plumps, certainly, the greatest of them all is love. Of course, in tongues and without love, in ancient religions, there was a lot of noise, banging of gongs in temple and clanging of cymbals. And perhaps in our charismatic age, we have to remember that some folks say you're not a real Christian until you speak in tongues. But Paul says there is the better way. That's not the way. What is use of knowledge if it is without love? An educated thief is worse than an uneducated, and could do a lot more damage. Knowledge without directing it for good. That's why the internet there is such a wonderful blessing and a terrible curse. You can direct it either way. Faith needed to move mountains. Faith is only the linking to the person. You can have faith in faith. And some people have unbounded faith in themselves. But faith links us to God, the wonderful nature. And love is obviously greater than charity. For charity can be dropping something into a purse of somebody in the street. A woman once said to a beggar, who was begging in the street, she says, "I'm giving you this not for your sake, but for the sake of Christ." And the beggar looked at what she dropped into his hat, and he said, "Then, For the love of Christ, could you no be more generous? Charity. It's a small thing. And so he contrasts it. And he says, there are a lot of things that people go after. And then he goes on to analyze it. And he says, what's it made of? In our kitchen at the home where we stayed in the little village of Ballauch outside Inverness, it's still there, although it's almost subsumed by the city of Inverness. We had in our kitchen a mirror. And the mirror was up on the side of the shelf and the window was here. And in the morning, the light would strike the mirror. But the mirror had a very thick bevel on all edges. And so when it hit the mirror, the kitchen was filled with the rainbow colours. And all, we always used to come into the morning and there it was, your face would be bright orange, purple, yellow, you know. And it was quite striking. And we realised, of course, very early, that light has its prism. You break it up into its constituent colour. And here is what Paul is doing in breaking up love. And he says, what's it like? Here is the spectrum. Here is how you break it up into its primary elements. And when you look at it, the elements are not something wonderful and exotic. They are very, very simple and ordinary. He says love, and here's what he says. It's patient. It's kind. It's generous. It's humble. It's courteous. It's unselfish. It's good-tempered. It's sincere. And it's optimistic. Wonderful. How many are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 elements in the spectrum. I couldn't count. I had to look up my notes. How devastatingly clear. Patience. We're not very patient by nature, are we, some of us? You look at any car at the traffic lights and see the driver. You look at a queue in the supermarket and somebody comes out with this car and it's no working. We're not patient. And yet how patient God is with us. He is very patient. I can remember there was a story being told of a chap who was in an open-air meeting and he was talking about God's love and God's truth, and there was a heckler. And this chap was saying, I don't believe in a God who said, and he began to curse and use some really rich words. And he then says, may God strike me down in 3 minutes if he is real. And he began to count, and he began to utter a few more oaths, and he took out his watch, and he began to count down the minutes. And of course, the guy who was taking the thing didn't quite know how to respond to this. And as he counted, and he says, there it is, your 3 minutes are up. And a wee lady, an old lady came out from the crowd and says, Ach, son, and she put him in his place this way, Ach, son, do you think you could exhaust the patience of God in 3 minutes? And everything changed. How patient God is. Kind. When you look at the Gospels, it's quite interesting. When you look at the Gospels and you see Jesus Christ moving with all kinds of folk, you just notice how many little kindnesses he did. You read, especially Mark's Gospel, read the simple, Andy did this, Andy did that. It's kind of a young man's Gospel. And it says, he looks at, or in John's Gospel, the woman at the well. Here he was, this lady with a past. And what is Jesus, whom no Jew would even look at? And Jesus says to her, lady, give me a drink. How kind he is to her. And that traitor, Zacchaeus, remember the guy who was gathering the taxes for the Romans? And everybody who would see him in the street, they wouldn't call him by his name. Hello, Zacchaeus. They would say, cheat. They would say, rascal. And they would call him a lot worse than that that we couldn't say this morning. And Jesus looked up into the tree and he said, Zacchaeus. He spoke by his name in a kind way. I want to stay at your house for tea. And the woman who was caught in adultery and they were going to stone her. And Jesus said, who's going to take the first stone? He who's without sin. And he didn't condemn her. He spoke to her kindly. Telling the people to, when Jairus' daughter died, remember, and he took her by the hand, Talitha cum, he lifted her up gently. And then what did he say? He said, give her something to eat. Feed her. She's desperately in need. Jesus was so kind. And that is love. And so there are many nameless acts. You know, sometimes when I take a funeral service, somebody will mention the little things that mean so much to the person. He says, every time I remember John, when he would go out and we would walk down the path, and then he would turn back and he would give me a smile and a wave. And she remembered this. He probably wouldn't have remembered it if you had asked him. But the little things can sometimes mean so much. Little acts of kindness. Love one another is not a feeling when Jesus commands us. It means that we are to act with good and never with harm. It means we are got to think of the other and not ourselves. We do good, we act kindly, we act graciously as Christ did. And that's a challenge to us because sometimes we can be the opposite. Yes, we trust the Lord, but the simple thing, love one another. Yes, we love the fellowship. But are we patient? Are we kind? Sincere and optimism, believing the best. Optimistic, believing the best. Today we're told not to trust anyone. And we tell our children and are warned to be watched with strangers offering sweets or doing things. Be on your guard. And how sad it is that we have to make children grow up out of the lovely childlike thing of an open trust and acceptance of one. And of course, we know that the world is different. But Professor Barclay used to speak of someone, the Arnold, the head of the rugby school, who refused in that day to flog. Many people used a cane, and he refused to do so. He said, I'm going to treat you as on your honor, gentlemen. I put you on your honor because I believe that if you're watched and spied on and beaten, you'll only do good through servile means and fear. I'm going to make you gentlemen. And so people were brought, the culprits, and they would give an excuse and told a few lies and made an excuse. And he said, boys, I take you at your word, I believe you. And soon afterwards, people said, he's an easygoing head. But after a while, there came a point where boys said, do you know, it's a shame to tell Arnold a lie because he always believes you. And they became better people through the kindness. And they surprised themselves. Love is deceptively simple and yet so impossible to do. Why? Because we need God's power to change us. The power of his love that sent his son is the power that we need in our hearts if we are going to love one another. It's so deceptively simple, but so impossible to practice. Love, the elements of love that is broken down. And lastly, Paul goes on to talk about the permanence of love. How triumphant it is, verses 7 to 13. He says, love is eternal. It will not end. It will last throughout time and beyond. It is the longest and the strongest thing in the universe. And he stresses how complete it is. It is perfect. Yes, we only know imperfectly. And we often assume things. And when we call somebody for something and then it turns out what they've been through, we have made a big mistake because we didn't know the whole circumstances. Yes, even Paul says what we know now is limited, like a steamed up mirror in the bathroom. And we look and we can't see our face clearly because the steam's in the mirror. And then he says, the mirror will be wiped clean and we will see fully beyond time itself. And that is the love that makes us fully perfect in reflecting the very perfection of God himself. And so Paul stresses the supremacy of all the gifts. And we must have this in our life if we are to follow the Master who taught us how to love. Faith leads on to sight. Hope leads on to the fulfillment of all our hopes. But love just keeps on loving. And so we need it. We need this love. And so this morning, the wonderful thing is that although we cannot achieve it with Christ, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It is he who plants this love into our hearts as he planted love in the middle of the into the universe at the beginning. And it is God who can help us to love one another as we ought. And so go out this week and practice it and let that love that sent the Savior be in our hearts the power to redeem and to fulfill the love of Christ. Amen. Thanks be to God for his word to us all this morning.